Good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Tuesday, March the 22nd, 2016, 1:14 coming up on 1:15 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we want to thank our guest from hour number one, Dr. Aaron Beck, the father of cognitive psychiatry when it comes to depression. We thank him for that visit. This hour, we're going to visit with a very interesting man who, at the very least, has led a very diverse life. He's been a police officer in Providence, Rhode Island. He became known certainly here in the United States and probably worldwide from 1984 until 2015 in Providence, 31 years as the dancing cop. Some interesting things happened in 2015 that maybe we'll talk a little bit about today, but I'm going to recount the years that this man spent on the police force, as well as entertaining a lot of people in Providence. He is Tony Lepore. Tony, how are you?
Good. How you doing, Scott?
Hey, good to speak with you. I've wanted to have you on for a while, and glad we're finally able to make it happen.
Great.
Tony, I just want to get started here. I want to go back to the beginning. Tell me what your childhood was like.
Well, I always, in my heart, I always wanted to be a performer, and I was growing up in the 50s. A lot of people don't realize I'm that old. Into the early 60s, I always wanted to be a performer, and I was very comfortable in front of people performing, and I never thought ever that I would be a police officer at that time. And what I used to do every weekend, my family, being Italian, would have the gang over, we used to call them, and my mother would be making a sauce, and my father would be making pizza, and at the end, I would put on a little performance, and I would mimic a lot of the people on black and white TV, like Red Skelton and all those different stars. They were famous in those days, and I enjoyed doing it, and I always had that in my heart. But as time went by, and as life is, I ended up graduating high school, and I was drafted into the service. I'm a Vietnam veteran. I did a year in Vietnam. Coming out, I needed a job. So the Providence Police Department at the time was actually recruiting on TV, and I applied, and I got on a job. I did 9 years nights, and then I went on days for another nine. I did another eight. I did 17 years service, so I could buy my three-year service time back and retire on a 20-year pension with the Providence Police Department.
Mm. What is it like to be a police officer in your time? What was it like?
It was much different. The bosses had more authority. It's something like what I was, the issue of which we'll probably talk about later. A boss on the street would have clarified that, got it all squared away, and nothing else would have happened. But today, it's we live in a politically correct world, as you know.
Yeah, and we're going to get into that because I've done some reading on that, and I've kind of filled the audience in as best I could, but it's very complicated, and we're going to get
it
to that.
It is complicated.
Yeah, and I'm not.
Excuse me.
Oh, no, and we'll get to that and hopefully in great detail. But I do want to talk about being a cop, because I think that's an interesting job. If you had to define it, what was the best part of it? What was the worst part?
You know, the camaraderie among the men. I was involved in two rescues. One car went off a bridge into a careen below. It was filled with water. It was in the middle of February. We jumped into me and my partner, and we rescued the two girls. Another one was an explosion downtown Providence when I was downtown walking, and I corralled an elderly couple, and I jumped in their car because I could hear the explosion. It wasn't far from the city, and they drove me down there, and the building was leveled, and I was the first officer down there, and we started pulling people out. No one was killed. And the ironic part about the whole thing, the owner went back the next day, and a wall fell on him and killed him. So that was just very unusual for that something like that to happen. But he went in there, I think, to look for his safe, and he was killed the next day. But we Loving those two, those are rewarding. A lot of accommodations for rest, but the most rewarding thing is I always communicated with people, and helping people out was a lot with me. I mean, sometimes a woman didn't have enough money one time for a cab. She had two children. It was raining. I gave her, in those days it was $5, Scott. I gave her $5 to get home. Stuff like that. You know, I try to help people as much as I could that didn't have as much as I had at that time. So I love the police, but I also love performing. I love the police department. I love the work. But I love performing, and we had to do traffic for an hour or 45 minutes a day, three offices, downtown Providence, and that's when I created my dance moves into my traffic directing.
Want to get to that in just a minute, but when you were on active duty, what was the worst part of the job?
What people do to each other and to children. And you always carry that in your mind, even after you're retired. And it's just extraordinary what people do to each other. It's just so horrifying to most people. And a lot of times I can't speak to another person to tell them about it because I would horrify them. So I would have to talk to an officer or a social worker. A psychologist, you know, or something like that. But it was, you know, and for me to get to that point, to be able to handle a situation like that, that takes years too, you know. And people don't realize what officers go through. One minute you could be delivering a baby, the next minute you could be in a shootout. So. That's the kind of job it was. You know, we were lucky we didn't have as many shootouts and many police officers shot an hour a day because we didn't wear bulletproof vests. Today they do. And they have to. It's a requirement. So, go ahead.
It's very interesting because, you know, it's one of those jobs, I would imagine, much like a firefighter, where, you know, when you go out in the morning, there's a chance for all of us that we might not come back, but the chances seem to be a little higher because you put yourself in harm's way. How do you deal with that day to day, and how does your family deal with that?
Well, you know, my wife is excellent with that. And the first thing she would tell the children is, when he comes in, don't bomb him with questions. She knew something like that could happen. And, you know, I've had a gun pulled on me, and it went on the news before she found out about it. And she was terrified, of course. In those days, we didn't have cell phones. We couldn't communicate to each other. So she had to wait for my phone call, you know, if I was okay. And they handle it, but this is my second marriage. And most police officers are married twice because it's tough on the family. It really is a tough job and tough on the family. You're not home a lot. You not only do duty for 8 hours, you also do details, you know, and it's a tough life. It's a tough life that way. But then again, you got the security. You got great medical. You got security for life when you retire, a better pension than you would get from Social Security. And we don't collect both because when you're unionized with the FOP, you don't collect hours unless you retire. And after that, you can start collecting your hours or before you went on the job for Social Security. So the family, it's great with the pension because you got all medical. And they can go to the doctor anytime, and other jobs you can't, you know. And that was great for me to have at that time when getting out of the service. And then I got my associate's degree through a law enforcement course, and that helped too. That gives you another incentive. So I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the job very much.
you say you're on your second marriage now. What is it hard to walk away from the job when marriages and family does suffer when you're doing it?
Yeah, the job is very important, but it's usually another issue that's indirectly caused by the job, if you understand what I'm saying. I mean, I don't like the job, but there's other things, like I'm not home enough, he needs discipline, or she this, and that, and that's constantly argued. Then it gets into other matters other than the issue itself. And then you don't get along, and that's it, you know. And of course, wives have to understand what you go through out there. And a lot of times, officers don't discuss it with their wives. Because it's a misunderstanding between two people with two different lives, other than being married, if you know what I'm saying.
What is the closest you came to ever dying? What is the most harrowing experience you had in your years?
Well, I would have to say diving in the water after those girls in the middle of February. I was hospitalized for 8 hours. And I was chasing, see, you don't know what the situation is going to be. I was chasing a youth, he might have been about 17, 18, in the city, who was knocking parking meters over with a sledgehammer and throwing them in a bag and walking down the street. So I saw him, I got a call, chased him into a garage, parking garage, and he hit underneath the car. And I grabbed him by the leg, and when I did, he pulled a gun on me. I pulled mine, and luckily he dropped it. And that was pretty scary.
How do you get to the point after an event like that where you get up and go to work the next day? That's bravery.
Yeah, that takes years and years to get over. If that happens early in your career, a lot of times that happened early in a lot of officers' careers, they could quit. But I've had so many close calls, like not similar to that, but you get conditioned for it. You condition your mind for it. You know things could happen. Now, if I shot that boy and he dropped the gun and I shot him after, it may have been an issue. See, you got to be like a quarterback within 2 seconds, or 1 second, or half split second. And that's what's hard about police work, making that decision. Like an officer going to a car for a traffic violation, the guy pulls a gun on him. He's not expecting that. He's got to be ready, but he's not expecting it.
I want to ask one more question about the actual police work, because this is the part of it that I think a lot of people could never get themselves to, and I don't know how police officers do, and it's tremendous that they do, because there are situations, like you just pointed out, where you do have to protect yourself. But was there ever a time in your on-duty time that you had to take someone's life in defense or for another reason? And if so, how do you reconcile that in your own mind?
Well, you have to reconcile it to the point where you did as much as you could to have him drop that gun. Okay? If it's a split-second thing, I'm lucky that never happened to me, except for that one incident the guy pulled the gun out of me. But a one-second thing, you can't really, you react more than think. But if it, we had another close incident in a house. We talked the guy down. He actually had a baby in his arms and had the gun up the baby's head. And he said he was going to kill the baby if we got any closer. We finally got him to drop the gun and get the baby out of the way and out of the house and everything. That took us 7 hours. And we had to get a priest there to talk to him. We got our chaplain there to talk to him. And we had to get an officer off duty who he knew to come to that scene. It was a very dramatic scene. And that was back in the 70s. And I am so lucky that I never had to kill anyone. But like I said, I was a Vietnam veteran. I've been through a lot of stuff. And I think that helped me a lot. And a lot of the people in my academy at that time were service people. They were coming out of the service from one branch to another. And that kind of protocol was very important to us. And now it's kind of hard because a lot of the people going on the jobs are not service people. They have to learn that part of it too, you know.
And again, we're talking, it's 29 minutes past the hour, we're talking to Tony Lepore, the famous dancing cop, and we want to get to that part of it now. One more question, Tony. If, and I know hypotheticals are strange questions, but do you think in your own mind, if you ever did have to take a life, that you could have reconciled it and went to work the next day?
Probably. Could have went to work the next day. But I may have taken a few days off, you know. But the best thing is to get back on the horse, if, so to speak. And that's what I would have done. And then I would have made a decision if the job wasn't for me anymore. But I think I would have probably went back the next day to get back on the horse and talk to other officers also. Going into the offices, making you feel like you did the right thing. And that's what helps. That helps a lot. The brotherhood never dies until you die. I'm retired. I'm a retired police officer. But this, I bleed blue. And as you know, I do for the next issue we're going to talk about.
Absolutely. And it want to get a little history behind the dancing cop. 1984, okay. How did this start?
Well, it was I had to do traffic every day. I mean, police officers hate doing traffic. And it's just very hectic job. It's raining, sometimes it's sunny, sometimes it's too hot. People in the cars definitely don't listen. And so I went out and did the old-fashioned way like normal people do. Until one night I saw a candid camera, and it was an officer from Philadelphia, and he was doing traffic differently, and a little dance move here and hand movements and stuff like that. So I got an idea, maybe I could go out and just make it entertaining, and it would make the time go by. Well, I did it for about a week, and the journal, our newspaper, came down and did a front page spread. And they called me the dancing cop. I never named myself the dancing cop. Now it's trademarked. But I was a dancing cop on the job for, I would say, 8 years. I retired, and now it's a trademark company. And that's where we get into the difficulty of the issue. I was not a police officer when we did that boycott.
And like I say, we're going to get to that very, very quickly. But when you first started dancing in 84, did you think it would bring so much attention?
Well, I'll tell you what I did. If I would do traffic and dance, but if I saw a boss come down the street, I'd go back and do it the traditional way so I wouldn't get caught. But the police station started getting phone calls. Who's this guy? We love him. We love to have him down in Boston. All this stuff going on. And, of course, the bosses up in Bristol, they didn't know what was going on. They set a few people up, but they never caught me. Then the Providence Journal put a front page spread on it. My chief loved it because public relations is very, 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 very important with the police department and the public. It's very important. And he loved it. He said, there's no accidents. Never had an accident in 33 years now.
Now, how did that happen? Because I would think you put a lot into this dancing. How do you keep the balls in the air, so to say?
Right. Well, you know, I make sure that the people are on the sidewalk, of course, and that's a hot job. Because there's a half hour to 45 minute lunch, and they're in a hurry. They want to get their lunch and go back to their office, or shoppers want to cross, and they don't understand that the police officer is in command, and then the cars. And now, today, it's a lot harder when I go out there, because people don't use their directional signals like they did in the older days. So it's very important for the voters to use your directional signal so I can go and do the next move I'm going to use. Every move has something to do with the traffic. I do spins. I go down on the ground. I wear knee pads. I wore knee pads when I was on tour. I took them off when I went back on regular patrol. You saw a lot of the moves, I'm sure, backwards moves and all those moves. They all have something to do what the traffic is doing. If the traffic is going a two-way traffic, I have certain moves for that. If I need somebody to make a left turn, I have to make sure the two-way traffic is stopped and then give them a fancy move. You have to use precaution before you do your moves. And you have to make sure in your mind the pedestrians and the motorists pick up what you're doing at the time. Whistle I use as a rhythm thing. You know, the whistle, the sound of the whistle may be quick, slow. If a driver's slow, I do something funny, and the whistle drags. So it's entertaining. I communicate back and forth with the motorist and the people on the sidewalk. I'm kind of a stand-up in the middle sometimes, a stand-up comedian. So it gets to be fun, and you have many, many, many phrases that you use over and over again, and the people love that.
What are some of the phrases?
Come on in, the water's warm. And to get everybody off the street, I blow the whistle, everybody out of the pool. In Italian, if you do something wrong and that's not right, we call them cagoozes, and they love that. And what a cagoozes is a swash. But to be called a cagoozes in Italian, it's kind of degrading. But most people don't know what it means, but they love it. The people yell out, cagoozes, cagoozes. They don't even know what it means. It's just a communication with the... And even when I reprimand somebody, they laugh. It's just a communication. They know I'm out there doing my job, but also it's an entertainment part of it. But the most important thing is safety, making sure. And I never had a problem with safety, thank God.
That being said, because it is entertaining, and it's entertaining to watch, did anybody ever get distracted by what you were doing and hit somebody? Was there ever an accident somewhere?
No, I never had that. I think people in the cars are more cautious when they see me to make sure they're doing the right thing. Of course, you get one or two people that drive too fast for the city, and that sometimes you might get a close call. But that doesn't happen a lot. But I'll tell you a quick funny story. At Christmas time, we have young rookies take over our positions, and to give us extra men downtown, because we had a lot of stores down there at that time. And I said, I'll be back. I'm going to grab a lunch. I'll be back in 20 minutes, okay? Well, I'm walking down the street to the restaurant. I could hear a screech. I look back, and he had an accident. It was someone hit someone in the rear end. And he was doing traffic, but he was the regular way, but he wasn't it wasn't that experienced. So I said, I can't even go for a lunch. But that was a funny story I tell all the time. And he was a rookie. I felt bad for him. I consoled him after. We got somebody else to do traffic while I took him to lunch with me. And the poor kid was very upset. But, it could be where the motorists may not understand what you're saying, but I try to make sure they do. And when I go down on my knees, you remember my visibility gets less when I'm down there, and I'm very cautious. 32 years, I don't. When I'm out there, every time I'm out there, I do the sign of the cross, and for one reason, to make sure my God is protecting me. But I also, the reason is to be cautious. That's the second. Be cautious. Don't take it lightly.
Did you
even
ever?
You've been doing this for 32 years.
Did you ever have a close call where you were almost hit?
Oh yeah, I almost landed in an MBZ. A bus, I lost my balance spinning. A bus came by, this is back in the 80s, and I put my hand out, if you could visualize this, against the bus while he's moving, and it was sliding because buses are flat. And I sprung back just before we got to the back wheel well. And if I didn't, I probably would have got my arm caught in that wheel. And then God knows what would have happened to me. But that was my two closest calls. And they were earlier in my career. I'm a little smarter now.
Well, what's your favorite dance? What do you like to do best?
Well, everybody wants to see is the backwards split. And that's when you bend backwards, like you're doing the limbo, and then you switch hands. But the hand that you switch that's up in the air, you wave. And then the other hand takes the ground behind you, and then the right hand waves. Then the left hand waves. So you keep switching hands. And at the same time, you're moving forward. And, not too many people can do that move anyway. I copied James Brown in his greatest, they called it the greatest live show. It was James Brown has the only one I ever knew that did that move, and I could do it. And I have to work out every day. People don't realize that I'm in my 60s, late 60s. I work out every day. I run every day. I'm in the gym lifting three times a week. And you have to keep in shape. I have to watch my body weight, especially now that I'm older. I try to keep at a certain weight. And I not only do traffic, I do indoor shows, outdoor shows. I have school shows I do with bullying. I do parades. I dance the whole parade. Some of them are 2 miles, some of them are 3 miles. Yesterday I did, Sunday I did a 3 mile parade. The week before I did a 3 mile parade and a show. So yeah, I have to keep a tip top shape. And, October 17th, I'll be 69.
It's amazing. Do you ever see a time when you would give this up on your own, that you would say, I'm not doing as well as I used to? Is the dancing part of it important?
Yeah, it's coming to an end. It'd probably be another couple of years. I could tell that certain things I can't do I used to be able to do, but the people that watch me in the parades don't know that. I do. Because when you get to do it 32 years, you can compensate moves. I've had injuries. I've had scope surgery on my knee. I dislocated my shoulder. I get a lot of shin splints, elbow problems. I mean, you get nicked when you're doing a parade. Because everybody wants to see a move from the beginning to the end. And it's usually a very difficult move they want to see. You know, they know the names.
when you retired from the police force in 92, why did you stay on doing this, and how did that deal come about?
Okay, I retired in 90, and I did some a food service business with my brother, who was from New Jersey, but he had a smaller company here. And the mayor of Providence, Mayor Cianci, who, God bless his soul, he passed away a couple of months ago, asked me to come back just to do Christmas. And I debated it. At the time, I was still pretty young, and I debated it. I said, why not? And, of course, I got paid to do it. And I talked it over with my brother. We talked it over where we could get somebody to do my regular business. And I went back for 10 days, and I did that. I did that from 92 till now, until 15. And because of what happened, they suspended me not to do it downtown, and also not to do the Providence Parade, which was this weekend. And, of course, it's very political, and it was a political issue, and I'm getting the backlash, but all the towns around Providence hired me for the same annual events that I've been doing. And matter of fact, I did Mystic Irish Parade 2 days ago in Connecticut. So I travel all over. I've done the Motor Speedway in Fort Worth. I opened up the Texas Motor Speedway back in 97. I travel all over. I did Sturgis Motorcycle Rally 2 years ago. I did 18 shows in 9 days. And I travel all over. I've done Decatur, Illinois Fair. So it's a company. It's trademarked. I have my own uniform. I own uniforms. I made my own patch after Providence fired me. It's the Rhode Island Dancing Cup now. So anyone can hire me.
What?
And to go in the street and direct traffic, I have to get permission from the town. If they want me to direct traffic in the street, normally the town will have a regular policeman at that corner with me while I do my thing. And it's a company. I travel all over with it.
And again,
I'm known all over the world. I mean, I was supposed to go to Austria, and for some reason something happened that month, and that was back about 5 or 6 years ago.
Do want to let the listening audience know we're chatting with the dancing cop, Tony Lepore. In the last 15 minutes here, 45 minutes past the hour, we're going to talk about, this will be the not so kind part of the interview, I guess. But from 92, or from 84 really, till 2015, everything's hunky-dory. And then, Tony, what happened last year? What exactly happened?
Well, I was, I got a Facebook stating a police officer went inside a Dunkin' Donut, and the girl was very belligerent to him, and she wrote on the cup, Black Lives Matter. And the police officer displayed it, and I thought that was wrong, because being a police officer all those years, we never had any problem with any of the merchants, especially food merchants. Never, ever, ever. And I know with Black Lives Matter what that is all about. It's not about Black Lives Matter. It's an agenda. It's a racist group, agenda-driven radicals. And it's just a it's just a runoff from the Black Panthers. That's all it is. And I knew that. So I put on my Facebook page that I'm boycotting Dunkin' Donuts at the time. And we boycotted the whole state. And they were all up, and I'm losing business. I have 5,000 people on my Facebook page. And you could add that by two and add that by three of members and people that know me. They were having a problem with that. Then we wanted was the owner to apologize to the officer and to the girl to be replaced. Never did, because the city of Providence and the FOP did not back the officer or the situation. So the owner went on and on and on with it for a week. So I organized a group called Citizens for Police. I have a page on my Facebook about police officers. And also, we went down there and picketed. And within 2 hours, the owner of the place gave us a written, him and the corporate office gave us a written apology of what happened, because we never did get anything from them. And I was not representing the police department. I was representing Citizens for Police. I am not a police officer. And because I'm not a police officer, my First Amendment rights were violated because the city did not hire me for the Christmas event I've been doing for 32 years. And also, they did not hire me again here. But not only that, Scott, they followed me to another town last Christmas because they were going to hire me because Providence wasn't. And their activists went there. And, of course, the city council shot it down. And the mayor still wanted me there, but they shot it down. So there, it was actually, they were following me around where I would not get jobs. Now, these were not police duties. These were actually performances that the town would hire me for. And last week, I couldn't do the St. Patrick's Providence parade. Because the city is very politically connected, and that's the way it is now. Now we're looking to do something legal, and I can only go so far with the legal procedures. But we're definitely going to do something.
When they called you, and you had a relationship with the city of Providence for a long time, when they called you in and said we don't want you anymore, how did that come down?
Well, we called. My wife does a lot of my work for me because I'm on the road a lot. She called City Hall, and City Hall, usually we call City Hall, and they said, and she just said to them, what do you want Tony to start? But we did, in our back of our minds, knew something was going to go down by the city. Okay? And this is a new regime. They got in a year ago, and they're having a lot of problems with the fire department, with the city, with the city school superintendents. One quit. The superintendent of school quit. They fired a chief in a fire department, and I knew they were trying to revamp everything, and they're not doing too well right now. But what happened was the commissioner's office called me to go down. I went down. And he said, and they said that they don't need my service anymore. Okay, I had to turn in my uniforms. I said, "Well, I pay for my own uniforms. You're not getting them." Also, they said what I did was disgraceful because the community leaders were driving them crazy on the phone, and they were telling them that I wasn't part of the department. But they turned it around and said I was representing the department, which I wasn't. And, of course, it was back and forth with the media for 2 weeks here. And that got very, very stressful for my family. But they were calling me anywhere from a racist to picking on a little 17-year-old girl at the counter. And went on and on and on and on. And the whole issue was not race. Was anything to do with race. It had to do with respect for a police officer going in to get a cup of coffee. That's all it was about. But they blew it out. They blew it out to be something other than that. And the newspaper was no better than some of the articles. There was only one publisher, one writer that was really good to me. But the rest, what they did was get answers and questions from the other side, and never called me to give my answers to what happened. They actually picketed a Christmas tree lighting that I was going to do, and they said it was going to be 150 people there to picket, and there was only 7. They did that on purpose, so I wouldn't go. I ended up worrying about the children that were going to be at that Christmas tree lighting, and I canceled. And then they were calling me a coward for not going. And this is what was going on. It was just a It was just very chaotic, especially on the news and the radio.
Now, that being said, Tony, what people, I think, associate the Black Lives Matter movement with is some of the incidents that have happened around the country. What is your feeling, forget the Black Lives Matter movement, but okay, about the incidents that have happened to people that are in the media, like the Trayvon Martin case and things that happened in Ferguson? What's your feeling on those incidents as a whole?
Well, I feel the officers are justified in every incident, except the Trayvon Martin. That's a little complicated, okay? Because he was a security guard or something that he was authorized to carry. But what I know about that case is he was getting his head smashed against the cement by this subject. And he thought, well, you get your head smashed against the cement a couple of times, you're going to think that this guy's going to kill me. And he shot him. and all the other incidents had to do with justified police actions. Don't get me wrong. Policemen make mistakes, and we have some bad apples out there. Don't get me wrong. But the majority, if you go by the numbers, it's very small. It's very small. But we have the internet now. We have Facebook. We have Twitter. And they put clips on what policemen do. And a lot of times those clips are edited. It makes the policemen look bad. When the department investigates it, they find out the police officer is justified on a lot of those incidents. What's going on now in, I think, Baltimore, they have no case there, and they know it. They're just dragging it on. And it's political. It's political. And it's one party against another, and there's elections coming up. And we always said to each other as brothers when I was a full-timer, remember, there's an election coming up. Be very careful out there. And they use policemen sometimes are pawns. And politicians use them to make themselves look good.
Do you wish now, knowing what happened, do you wish that you had not made this such a public issue? That you certainly could have given your opinion on it, but not went and led protests?
Well, no, because this was going on. What happens is a police officer always tries to stop a situation from happening before it happens. And this would have not stopped in the restaurants. It would have continued and continued and continued. And I don't regret it at all. I don't at all. I am backed by many, many officers all over the country. They actually, after I picketed Dunkin' Donut in Florida, if you look it up, Florida police actually had their own men off duty picketing Dunkin' Donuts that were doing the same thing. So we nipped it in the bud. Have you heard of any incident like that happening since last October? Maybe one? Not many. And we made an example that we are not going to put up with this kind of stuff. I will do it again. Citizens for Police, which is my organization, and I have a Facebook page. It's the Citizens with the number 4, Police. On that page, we'll tell you exactly what's going on all over the country. We have many policemen. I think we have right now 20-something policemen shot and killed this year, where last year we had one or two. It's getting worse out there.
When it comes to this situation as a whole, and certainly you did have freedom of speech, as you say, to lead a picket of Dunkin' Donuts and to protest what had happened, is it the right of the people who have protested you and cost you jobs, much like Dunkin' Donuts was cost business, is that their freedom of speech to protest you?
Right. Exactly right, but not on a paper cup in a company where people to buy a coffee or a donut or whatever. That should not, political speech, I shouldn't say political, freedom of speech should not be used in a restaurant. The owner should have took care of that. She wants to write Black Lives Matter and carry that cup outside or carry a sign, fine. That's her right, just like it was our right to picket, but not in a place of business.
It's very interesting because this has become not just your case, but a lot of topics, and certainly one very close here in Ohio. Last year, it wasn't in Ohio, but next door here in Ohio, when we have the law that came down in Indiana that you did not have to sell when same-sex marriage was made legal, that you did not have to sell things in a business to somebody right. If you knew they were same-sex marriage. So would you be for or against that?
Well, I guess it's a religious thing, religious freedom.
Right.
And I think that the people selling the product, if it's against their religion, they shouldn't. They shouldn't sell it.
But isn't that...
That's the way I feel.
But isn't that... I mean, certainly in their private life, they would be allowed to do what they do. But in that private setting, much like the Dunkin' Donuts situation, she could go protest outside, she could pick it outside. Wouldn't the same apply there, that they can pick it outside, but as a business... A business is a business, and if it's legal in the...
A religion is a religion.
Right, but if
now you're talking something deep-rooted in a person's life, you know, and now you're getting into difficulties of legality,
well,
you know, but Black Lives Matter is not a religion.
That's exactly true, but I guess what I'm drawing the parallel to is when same-sex marriage was made legal in this country by the Supreme Court... Isn't it that is their right to marry somebody? So do all private business have the right to deny people based on their beliefs?
Well, like I said, you know, it's a very difficult topic. I wasn't worried about Black Lives Matter. I wasn't worried about... I didn't even know the nationality of the person that wrote this and was belligerent to the police officer until December, and this happened in October. So I think they're apples and oranges, those two cases.
Okay. Go ahead. Yeah, I guess I was just saying, as a private business, if we hold all private businesses to the same standard, when you go in there, if you're an establishment that's a retailer, and you invite people in, should you be allowed to treat people differently on the basis of anything?
Depends on what it is. Like I said, religion, freedom of religion is a different avenue, and it's different in the courts. This was not a political issue. The town made it a political issue. I did not make it a political issue. I was sticking up for the officer who had this written on his cup, and who knows who could have done whatever to the coffee. And that's all it was.
Well, this
but
is...
they made it a political issue. Black Lives Matter jumped on it right away. The NAACP jumped on it right away. The city, of course, stayed with them, depending on their, you know, political beliefs. And I was all alone. I was the only one that stood up for that officer. The local FOP did nothing. The national FOP said something. But I have another union right now that's backing me, and it's LESMA. LESMA. And they are above all unions. But they back police officers and retired police officers who are in trouble.
It's very interesting. I want to get two questions in here, Tony. Do you think not the movement itself, but do you think the waitress who wrote it on the cup, do you think she was making a political statement, that she was part of the political activism that is Black Lives Matter, or that she was just speaking out for her own opinion that maybe some officers have treated some African-American people poorly based upon their race?
Well, I don't know that. I can't speak for her, but all I can tell you this, that a lot of the young people and the college kids of white or black, mostly white, are protesting for this group. And I also know that a lot of the agitators are paid. You see them in every town, the same faces, the same ones. And George Soros is the main reason. He's funding all these groups, and you know who he is.
Absolutely, it's an interesting story, because now they've kind of prohibited your being able to do things. But
in Providence.
Right, in Providence. But I guess is that ultimately their right and decision to do that.
It is, but not to follow me into other towns, defamate my character in the newspaper, okay, and take my First Amendment rights away. I was voicing my opinion. That shouldn't have reciprocated into me being fired, because I was not a police officer at the time. There's a separation there. It's going to be a very difficult case if we go to court.
But you plan to do that.
I was an officer. They had all the right in the world.
But you were, what you did as the dancing cop, you were employed by the city. So if the city doesn't like what
you... No, I was not. I was only employed for that one job.
That one job.
That was Christmas traffic.
Right.
That's it.
Right.
I was a private company.
Right. But if they choose not to employ you anymore, isn't that their prerogative?
It is their prerogative. But what they did was stop me from doing that same job in another town.
Is that their freedom of speech to let people know that?
Well, we'll find that out sooner or later.
Yeah, and it's an interesting case.
It is very interesting, and I'll tell you the truth. It's going to be a long case, probably, if we go. It's tough going against a municipality and a civil rights group. So we're debating and we're moving with cautiousness. But we'll see.
But
right now, the Providence has not hurt me. Oh, if this says it all. When all the towns around Providence, Lincoln, I can go 30 towns outside of Rhode Island, in Rhode Island, that are still hiring me, does that say something about Providence?
I think to most people they would draw a conclusion there. But to the people who have said, and you know this is where it came from, that have said, you are a racist because of this.
Right.
What do you say to them?
They were mostly community leaders and of different organizations, but not the community itself. The community itself wanted me back to do traffic. The black community, the white community, the Hispanic community, the Polish communities in Providence, the Irish wanted me back, but the politicians didn't, and that's the difference. Community leaders that don't actually represent the community itself as a whole. That's what the whole thing is about. That's what irks me.
What do you say to the people who say you're a racist?
Well, I'll tell you this. My daughter goes out with a black man. And they're getting married soon, okay? He's the most wonderful man I ever met. I have all my camera crew on my television show. Half of them are of color. I am going to stand up. I am giving a black woman away at her marriage in July. Her husband and I are the best of friends. My wife's in the wedding party. If I am racist, I'll eat my police hat.
Tony, when this is all over, when people look back on you, your whole career, what do you want them to remember you for? What's the epitaph of the dancing cop?
I stand for the truth. Nobody could ever buy me. No politicians. Buddy Cianci, who called me back, it wasn't because we were politically connected. He loved what I did, and he thought it would be great for the city. That was it. And I have a lot of political friends, a lot of different towns. They're just friends. I stand up for the truth, and people know that.
Are you?
That's why I have the majority of the population in this area. They love what I do.
Are you supporting anybody in the current presidential campaign?
No, I'm an independent voter, and I'm leaning towards the right, of course. And it's between Cruz and Donald Trump. That's how I feel. I think we need a big change in this country. It's going too politically correct, and that's how I take it. And a lot of people won't come out with that, and they think the same I do, because they're afraid of their jobs, afraid of what could happen to them if they do.
Tony, this has been fascinating, and I hope you enjoyed it, because
I enjoyed it.
And I hope you come back, because I think this is a very deep issue, and I think it's a deep issue in a lot of places in this country now, as much as it is in your case, as much as it was in Kentucky, as much as it's been in Indiana, and as much as it's been in Ferguson. And I think freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and freedom of the press, and the current presidential campaign are very interesting, and I hope you come back often.
Scott. And one more thing I want to say, Scott, all the brothers and sisters out there, I know you have no voice, okay? Because you are under the command of your police department. But there are citizens out there that back you. We love you. You're our first line of defense. Without you, we would have utter chaos. Thank you very much.
Tony Lepore, the dancing cop. Thank you, Tony. I hope you come back in the future.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Hey, we're done. Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
Now turning to weather.